Roberto Baldwin is here to tell us the difference between encryption and a giraffe. He'll also review the Amazon tap, and I'll tell you why I think it was invented by somebody's brother. And finally, why a Mediterranean diet is best for binge-watching Netflix. All that and more on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1491, recorded Wednesday, April 13th, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost, automated investment service and the most sophisticated way to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit wealthfront.com/TNT and sign up to get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's wealthfront.com/TNT.
And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT.
Hello, and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about all the technology news with people who delight in technology.
So delightful.
I am Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howell. I'm just going to go ahead and put this out there. Anyone that is thinking about something to get for Megan, just as like a thank you for doing the show and everything, go ahead and send a box of It's here to the studio. Put Megan's name on it. We got to make sure that Megan tries an It's It, because apparently she has not. And if you have not, it's really delicious. It's like this like a cookie sandwich with ice cream in the middle covered in chocolate. Anyways, look it up. Send a gift to Megan pronto, because she really needs an It's It.
Wouldn't it melt by the time it get caught to me?
I think they have that kind of stuff figured out.
Okay.
Right? I have to imagine.
There's technology for everything
yes.
these days.
You know what? Actually, they sell this at Costco, I believe. So the next time Twit does a Costco run, mm-hmm. we should just add that to the list. Let's do
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Bring back to the show once again, Roberto Baldwin from Engadget, who's kind of been at F8. Well, I think the last couple of days. I don't know if you're there now, though. Are you, Roberto? Or are you back at your base?
I escaped from the clutches of F8 a few hours ago. It's winding down. All the news is over.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm back at the office. But about the It's It thing, they will ship it with dry ice. You can order it from itsit.com or whatever their website is.
Yeah.
They'll ship it with dry ice. So if someone wants to ship you some It's It's.
Excellent.
We have no excuse.
Because I hate wet ice. I only like dry ice.
Good to know.
All right. Well, enough about cookies and chocolate and ice cream. And I've never said that
enough.
In my life.
Yeah.
But let's get to the news. Richard Burr and Dianne Feinstein have issued a formal draft of their aggressive encryption bill that leaked last week. The Hill says not much has changed in this draft, with the exception of a clarification about when government can seek a court order compelling companies to help crack phones. According to The Hill, the new section calls out specific crimes, both federal and state crimes, that make a person eligible for this cracking from a company. Those crimes include those resulting in death or serious bodily harm, federal crimes against a minor, serious violent felonies, and federal drug crimes, also foreign intelligence, espionage, and terrorism cases. So I guess what we're saying here is that when we talk about this being a slippery slope, and imagine that lawyers are going to use these proposed measures to compel Apple to crack phones, and in any case, like, you know, going so far as like child custody cases that is brought up, this would not apply in those cases, but the ones mentioned before. No penalties were listed for companies that refused to comply. So basically the same thing that we heard last week.
Yeah, a few kind of corrections. What do you think?
This bill is it's the equivalent of having someone who's never seen a giraffe draw a giraffe. Like, you've never seen a giraffe, and someone told you once that there was an animal with a long neck, and then said, draw a giraffe. That's what this bill, the write-up of this bill is like. It's
it makes
it's hard to pinpoint all the things that are wrong with it. And one of the key issues is that it also talks about licensing and distributing of software. If you're a company that licenses and distributes software, that software has to be vetted as well, which means Apple or Google would have to vet like WeChat or WhatsApp or every app that goes. The White House is like, no, it's I think they just rushed into making a bill because they, you know, terrorism.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They say specifically they're not banning encryption. Encryption in and of itself is not illegal. They're just they just want to make sure that that encryption can be broken, is breakable, essentially.
So math is not illegal.
Yeah, yes. Math itself is not illegal. Encryption as a thing that people do. I mean, even Burr says, you know, he feels strongly that consumers have the right to seek solutions to protect their information. However, those solutions should not be above the law, which I think is kind of an interesting statement because, well, they're not actually above the law. I guess what he's saying is they shouldn't, you know, they should be deemed above the law and should not be. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's kind of confusing, but it's very confusing.
We're not banning, you know, encryption. We're just banning the actual use of it and how it works.
Right.
By making it so if you encrypt anything, you can decrypt it. I'm like, well, that doesn't.
It's like you can have marijuana, you just can't grow it, or you can't buy it, but you can have it. Okay, then how did it get there? Similar, I suppose.
Well, I mean, I don't think this is going to become a law. Like, Democrats have already said that they're going to filibuster it. Like, it's a long, I just don't think, I mean, the White House has gone back and forth. They've said, you know, it's too strict, but, you know, they haven't come out and said anything official about it. But I think it's worth talking about, worth writing your congressperson about it, but I don't think this is going to go through the bill becomes a law thing that we know learned about in school.
We read a lot of things for this show. A lot of, you know, we are obviously very tuned into what the tech press and the media are really kind of gravitating towards. When this was a draft that leaked last week, it got a lot of pickup and everybody was talking about it. Now it's this official thing and I feel like no one's talking about it. I'm like, hey, wait a minute. This is actually the thing that is kind of going forward. What's going on here? So, I don't know. I guess it remains to be seen. And even if it does pass through, then there's the possibility that it ends up going to the Supreme Court at some point and gets further, you know, gets rejected at that point. But it really does kind of seem to a certain degree like a disconnect. You can understand where their intentions are. You know, nobody likes terrorism. Nobody likes a lot of these bad things that this bill is setting out to kind of protect against. But it really just seems like a very wide blanket is being thrown on the fire. And, you know, there's a disconnect there. Kind of continuing along this little path here, shortly after the FBI dropped its case against Apple, having found a third party to help them gain access to the contents of the phone that's belonged to the San Bernardino terrorists. Talked about that plenty of times on the show. It was revealed that an Israeli firm called Cellebrite had possibly at least a piece of helping with that access, helping the FBI kind of gain access to that phone. But more of those pesky people familiar with the matter told the Washington Post that it was, in fact, these other people, the aid of a group of professional hackers that submitted the unknown flaw to the FBI and not Cellebrite. That flaw, it said, was used to create hardware to help crack the PIN while sidestepping the security measures on the phone that might actually erase the data if it was done incorrectly. They were supposedly paid a one-time fee in order to do this. This is something that they've done before. The group actually has sold in the past vulnerabilities to the U.S. Government before. This would kind of fall in that terminology of gray hat. You know, you've got white hat hackers, you've got black hat hackers. This is gray hats, where essentially they find these vulnerabilities and they hold on to them and then sell them, in this case, to the government. So I don't know. I guess we think we're finding out more about this, but it's always still people familiar with the matter. So at this point, who knows?
I mean, that was expected. The exploit merchants were going to sort of step up and you know, because that's what they do. They find exploits, they buy them from either individuals or they create it, you know, they figure them out themselves and they sell them to nation states or they sell them to corporations or they sell, you know, it depends on, you know, the actual merchant. Are they going to send it to someone, you know, are they going to sell it to Syria, someone with a really scary human rights history, or are they going to sell it to just the United States and, you know, maybe countries that have a little bit better human rights history? You're not really sure with these exploit merchants, so you just kind of, you know, and the FBI is working with them, which is a bit frightening, and we'll see what happens.
That is a really good point. I hadn't really considered that. If this is their job to find out these exploits and then sell them to someone when the time is right, I mean, you know, do they have, are there scruples there? Like, do they care who they're selling them to? They're making their living off of selling these to. And if, in fact, they have worked with, you know, let's say governments that our government, you know, maybe don't play nice with or whatever the case may be, did our government know that going into this relationship? Like, is there any real way to vet an anonymous hacking organization such as this in that case? I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean, I think I know the answer to my question, but why doesn't the government employ these people? Is it because they can't pay them enough money? I'm guessing is the answer to that question.
I mean, Zerodium offered, what was it, $1 million bounty for an iOS 9 exploit, and they paid it apparently.
Wow.
And, you know, Zerodium is an exploit merchant, and they sell, you know, they buy and sell exploits. They, you know, they'll buy that for $1 million. They'll sell it to somebody else for $5 million. Mm-hmm. The hacking team. I mean, it's just, you have a, you know, these, it's, and it never gets, you know, those vulnerabilities, you know, until, you know, somebody in a security researcher finds that vulnerability and, you know, tells Apple about it, you know. This exploit's out there in the wild. It's being bought. It's being sold. It's being used by individuals. It's being used by nation states. No one's really sure what's going on. And then, you know, finally, maybe, you know, a regular white hat security researcher will find it. They'll disclose it to Apple or Google or whoever, and then it gets plugged. But until then, who knows?
Yeah. The FBI is saying that, well, I mean, as per this Washington Post article anyways, the White House is likely to decide at some point here in the near future whether to disclose the vulnerability to Apple or not. I'm guessing not. I mean, I would imagine if the FBI had it their way, that wouldn't happen, because that would kind of close the door for at least that limited number of phones that this particular exploit would work with. But they do say if the vulnerability were to be identified externally, like publicly, then they will certainly disclose at that point that it was the one that they used. So there you go.
Yeah.
There's that, at least, I guess.
Well, if it's disclosed, they're going to disclose.
Yes, exactly.
Right. And of course, Apple has no like legal standing to demand that they tell them what
right.
it is.
Right, no, they don't. And they're actually not going to pursue that either. Mm-hmm. In the case of, like, you know, suing the government or whatever. So they're gonna let it go.
Well, moving on to lighter topics. Today, Amazon officially announced a new Kindle that was leaked earlier this week. As predicted, the new Kindle Oasis is the thinnest and lightest Kindle ever, with an ergonomic design for one-handed reading. It has a 6-inch high-res 300 PPI display, fancy covers that come in black, Merlot, and walnot. I like the Merlot. The Oasis will cost you $289.99 and will be released on April 27th. Roberto, are you a Kindle owner?
I am a huge fan of the Kindle. I have like four. I have four Kindles. So, and you know, this is, I like the idea. I actually like the asymmetrical design of this, where, you know, because I'm usually holding it with one hand, mm-hmm. and the back of the Kindle is usually pretty slick. And so it's, you know, there's nothing for me to grip. So having that sort of, you know, that sort of taper design where I can reach behind it and hold it with one hand and the page turn buttons is pretty nice. $300 though. I mean, that's
pretty darn expensive.
I'm fine with my Paperwhite for now. I think I'm good. But it's the same screen. It's just brighter, and I don't need it to be any brighter than it is at this point.
But the battery lasts for like 20 months on standby, Roberto. 20 months.
That's true. If I'm 20 months is a long,
yeah, it's a long
20
time.
20 months is too long.
Yeah. I started reading a book, and then 6 months later, I'm like, I wonder how that book's doing.
Oh, cool. The battery's only gone down 3%. I kind of appreciated how on the Amazon page for this, it shows a woman sitting by the ocean on the beach with her Kindle. Pretty much that's like the enemy, the ultimate enemy of the Kindle is water and sand. So yeah, this is where people often choose to, you know, want to take their Kindle. So maybe someday in the future, Amazon will realize that a very meaningful upgrade to the Kindle beyond what they've already done would be water and dust protection.
Yeah.
You know, so that it could survive the elements, I suppose.
If you don't have to charge it for like 6 years or however long, you know, the battery like is now. I mean, you can seal the port.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ta-da.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, I still like to read old-fashioned books that I often check out from the old-fashioned library.
Wow.
But yeah, I have the first-generation Kindle, which I think is now a brick because I didn't do the update because I don't know where it is. But this is pretty. I do like it. It does look like it feels like a book. But if I were going to start reading on the screen, I think I would just read on my basically waterproof iPhone. And you know, now, well, it has, now it has the True Tone and the Night Shift and all the things that are supposed to make whatever Kindle's screen made it better for reading, right?
I don't need, my phone is my phone. And if I'm on my phone, guess what? I'm getting tweets. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, what's going on? Oh, let me check my email. Oh, there's this. And the Kindle's like one trick pony. All I'm doing is I'm reading. I'm not being bothered by anything. That's my sort of like big deal. Like why I really love the Kindle's that. That's all it does.
Right.
It does one thing, does a good job at it, and I can just have a bunch of books on there, and I just cram it full of books. And if I finish a book while I'm out or I'm doing something, I can just grab another one. I'm not tempted to tweet, which, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, you know I tweet a lot.
Mm-hmm. Temptation's there.
Okay, yeah. So if you
need like an isolation mode is what you need.
Yeah, or some self-control, perhaps.
No.
I know. I don't have it either.
That doesn't work.
I'm kidding.
That doesn't work.
Insane. Talking crazy.
Exactly. Did you know that depending on the quality of your USB-C cable, you might be running the risk of frying the technology that it's connected to? Months ago, Google employee and hero of USB-Cers everywhere, Benson Luong, went on a rampage. He was testing and rating knockoff third-party USB-C cables on Amazon. And he was just kind of doing things like noting the ones that were proven to do things like, you know, destroy your devices. It even destroyed one of his Chromebook Pixels in the process. The USB 3.0 promoter group that developed the USB 3.0 spec is cracking down on rogue cables by implementing software authentication that can be enforced when a cable is plugged into a device. It confirms the authenticity of the USB device, the charger, etc. And that confirmation basically tells the device that it's safe to use that cable and your device won't die in the process. So I think this is good news. I'm surprised that, you know, I'm surprised that the risk was there in the first place because it really seemed like this was a little bit of a rampant issue. I don't know. Good change.
If I can go into like Walgreens and buy, you can just buy just random cables now everywhere.
Yeah.
And I'm always curious, like, what's the quality of those cables? Because the cables are like 30 cents. Like, I can get a stick of gum or I can get a cable. And I'm always a little concerned about the quality of those cables. And if that cable is going to destroy my device, I think maybe having, you know, a piece of software that says, hey, you know, maybe you should just unplug this really quickly. That's a good thing.
Yeah, it's also it also cracks down on malware and exploits because, you know, certain it's definitely a target. USB just in general can be a very, you know, easy vector for hacking and malware and that sort of stuff. And so this will actually they give the example, a bank could require a security certificate exist inside supported cables so that somebody plugs in an unsupported cable, the software rejects it from even working with the system entirely versus the supported ones that the banks have issued, let's say, or whatever. Saying that that's all protected, 128-bit encryption protected on the cable. So, yeah, it's good news. Even our cables are getting high-tech, you know, smarts and all this kind of stuff. The one bummer is that it's not going to work for older cables. So, like, this, you know, the software and hardware or the software and firmware and of your devices that might be able to be updated, you know, remotely, let's say with an update. But your old USB cables, if they aren't built with this spec in mind, they aren't going to work. So you're pretty much going to have to replace them or any unsupported hardware. So,
all right. Well, Google has announced a new feature to help you schedule more than just your appointments and meetings. It's called Goals. It's rolling out to Android and iOS, and it will allow you to add personal goals like exercise, reading, relaxing, or just about anything. And Google will fit these goals into places when you don't have appointments and meetings. You can defer the goal if that time doesn't work for you. And then Google will use machine learning so it doesn't keep bugging you about all this stuff like all the other personal improvement apps that I've downloaded and never used over the years, because that's the worst. Like, I have such optimism, and I will download an app that's going to help me do all the personal improvement things in my life, and then it just notifies me like crazy, and I just get annoyed. But this is supposed to learn when I'm actually not going to. I don't meditate every day, which I still get a lot of reminders to meditate every day, and It's been a while.
You try.
It's been a while.
Try to make
so
room
I,
for
I
it.
Tried to. I updated my Google Calendar, and I still don't have this.
Yeah, I don't have it either.
As often is the case. But if you use reminders or you use that little plus, if you're watching the video, there's that little plus in the bottom right. You just press it, and then you'll add your goal, and then your future awaits you. What do you think, Roberto?
I'm just so happy to have something else I can dismiss.
I know, right?
I'm like, this is because the most working out I'm going to get is actually creating the goal. And then I'm like, I need to start working out. I got to lose like 10 pounds in like a month. This is awesome. This is great. And then tomorrow I'm like, okay, maybe tomorrow. And then the machine learning is just going to realize, oh, he's just lazy. Just let him go. Let him be. Let him eat his it's.
I think I just figured out what we need. We need phones that also act as weights, because we're not going to put our phone down. So if we're lifting our phone throughout the day, we might as well be like lifting 15 pounds in the process. You know?
And I don't think we care about light devices anymore. No, we want the battery. So if it means the battery is going to be bigger and it's going to be heavier.
Yeah, there we go. We're getting buff in the process.
Yes, exactly.
By the way, Google Calendar turns 10 years old today. So happy birthday, Google Calendar. And in order for this to work, I mean, you got to be on top of living your life inside your calendar, which... I mean, I schedule a lot of things through my calendar, but I have wide open things that doesn't necessarily mean that they're wide open, even though they are on the calendar. So, you know, it ends up, I guess, over time, it would be kind of noisy for it to be recommending things here, even though I don't schedule every single point of my day inside the digital calendar, just the most essential things that I need to get reminded of, and other things are spoken for, even though they're not in there. So,
Like dinner.
Yes.
Eating.
Sleep.
Yes. I don't know. I mean, I do have breaks where like I fill them with meetings or exercise or, you know, something else. So yeah, I am looking forward to using it. I am optimistic, as I said.
Okay. Well, I'm always willing to try them too. I also think that it's neat, like the machine learning aspect of this. Mm-hmm. If it notices that you are continually deferring something from a particular time of day, on a particular day of week or whatever, over time it will get a little bit smarter and be like, okay, well, maybe that's not a good time to continue, you know, suggesting. So let's move on to something else.
Mm-hmm. We're all going to start working out at 2 a.m.
Hey, why are you here at Google Calendar? Oh, yeah, okay.
Sold me. Machine learning knows more than I do. So.
What do I know? It's machine. It's learning. I stopped learning in fifth grade. So.
It'll wake you up at 1:30 for your 2 a.m. Gym appointment every single morning. Won't that be nice?
Yes. After the break, Attila the Drone and other weirdly named Facebook announcements. But first, let's take a minute to thank Wealthfront, the sponsor of this episode. Now, we were just talking about using the Google Calendar app to make more time for me time. You can clear a little bit of time off your schedule by canceling your weekly appointment with your financial investor who has been keeping you updated on all your investments. You do not need that appointment. You want everything in your financial portfolio just to work so you can focus on spending more quality time with your Facebook bots. But trying to do all this yourself, especially the right way, is complex and time-consuming. Wealthfront automates the sophisticated services that traditionally require you to pick up a phone or visit an advisor in person. You save time, money, and frustration. Wealthfront takes action on your behalf automatically, finding ways to optimize your investments nonstop. Now, traditional advisors charge huge fees, between 1% and 3% of what they manage. With Wealthfront, you pay 0.25% a year. That's 25 basis points, zero commissions, and no hidden fees. That's less than $5 a month to invest a $30,000 account. There are no additional charges for any of Wealthfront's services. With Wealthfront's new portfolio review, you can see if your portfolio is at risk, how diversified your investments are, what you're losing in fees. You can even minimize your taxes. You can get started investing today with as little as $500. It only takes a few minutes to sign up at Wealthfront.com, and it goes right to work monitoring your portfolios around the clock and taking action as soon as an opportunity arises. Wealthfront is transparent and accessible. You can view and track all your accounts in one place. And now Wealthfront can track both your Wealthfront and non-Wealthfront bank and brokerage accounts that they'll provide in a summary of all your assets. You can also see every trade that Wealthfront makes on your behalf in your dashboard, on your desktop, or with their mobile app. Visit Wealthfront.com/TNT to sign up and get your free personalized investment portfolio. You'll see the customized allocation they recommend for your profile. And just for Twit listeners, if you sign up to invest, Wealthfront will manage your first $15,000 entirely free of charge for life. Join the many Twit fans who have seen huge success with Wealthfront and claim your offer today at Wealthfront.com/TNT.
All right. So past couple of days, Facebook's F8 conference has been a thing. Roberto, you've been kind of, you know, wandering the floor, I'm sure, taking a look at all the awesome stuff. We talked actually a lot on the show yesterday about some of the announcements. By no means did we tackle everything because there was a lot in that hour and a half announcement at the top of the yesterday morning show. One thing that Zuckerberg and company kind of spent a lot of time on was global reach of the internet, Facebook's efforts to improve connectivity. They briefly mentioned the Terragraph and Aries systems during yesterday's keynote. And I don't know, we have some information about those efforts. You actually wrote about this today. So I suppose, first of all, tell us a little bit about Terragraph. What issue is it designed to tackle specifically?
Terragraph. Oh, okay. Sorry. It's been a long day.
I understand.
Terragraph is, you know, in dense urban areas, what happens, especially if, you know, you have this sort of legacy, you know, city. It's been there for maybe hundreds of years. And it's difficult to lay down cable or fiber and help the inhabitants have, you know, high-speed internet. So what Telegraph will allow you to do is, instead of trying to lay down cable, you create these nodes with on the 60 gigahertz nodes that they'll handle, you know, quick internet, and they'll be able to penetrate buildings and trees and whatnot. You know, what the downside of that range of the spectrum is that it doesn't go for very, you know, it doesn't have much of a range. So they would put them every 200, 250 meters. And so it's basically you're just creating repeaters throughout a city that allow people to get on the internet, you know, with quicker access. Because they talked a little bit today about 2G access, which is, if you've ever been dropped down to 2G access on your phone, you know it's completely worthless. It's the only thing you can really do is send text messages. Mm-hmm. And if you can give people 4G LTE access, especially in, you know, underserved areas, you know, you're allowing them to do more than just, you know, get on Facebook, and, you know, you can look for a job, you can find out about, you know, going to the doctor, you can find, you know, bus fares. I mean, it's the sort of how important the internet is, you know, we use, you know, I use it for Twitter, I use it to watch Netflix, but in reality it's how people are paying for stuff, it's how they're, you know, determining if they can go to the doctor, it's how they're getting jobs. And, you know, the jobs thing is huge. You know, if you can only look in the newspaper, newspapers are kind of dead when it comes to jobs. Everything is on the internet. I mean, you can find out how much, you know, if you're selling goods, like how much everyone else is selling them for, so you can stay competitive. For underserved areas, it sounds like a great idea. It's just, you know, I just hope that, you know, we don't run into the sort of issues we had before where it's this sort of walled in internet. Like, you can have the internet for free, but you can only use like these services, and we really want you to be a Facebook, you know, use Facebook, which is always kind of, you know, frightening, because it's almost, I don't want to say colonialism, like digital colonialism, but yeah.
Yeah.
I
understand.
How much did he say about free basics? I mean, the part that I listened to, it seemed like he was really talking. I mean, everybody that was speaking today, especially, was, you know, saying like, we want this for everyone. We were open sourcing this. Did they talk about free basics at all, or were they steering clear of that mostly today?
Today was mostly about the technology behind it. Yesterday was the very like Mark Zuckerberg running for president type, you know, yeah, like, we're changing the world, yeah, and we're doing all those things. And I'm like, you need to bring down the hyperbole, buddy. you know, today was a lot about the actual technology behind it. You know, their giant flying V, they're, you know, it's like a very thin B-2 bomber, that, you know, that gives people internet. It'll stay up and
blast people with internet cannons. Yes.
And it uses lasers to, mm-hmm, you know, as the backbone, so the laser shoots at the plane, which shoots at other planes, and there's lasers pew pew everywhere, and then those planes will shower down internet upon people in rural areas.
Now, is that the drone Aquila, the drone, yeah, which I call Attila the drone. I know it's Aquila, but it sounds like Attila.
When we were doing the Facebook coverage yesterday, we did think it was kind of interesting that they roll out, that they kind of, again, show off this gigantic bomber-looking thing. They show off these internet cannons, and then the thing's called Aquila. And it was like, okay, tone it down here. You know, if what you're trying to do is reach the world and set them at ease at the like potential overreach of Facebook and, you know, in its efforts and everything, this is not the way to do it. Naming your bomber with, you know, Wi-Fi cannons Akilla, probably not the best way to go, but hey.
Right, it sounds like Attila the Hun also.
A lot of the world are very, you know, drones are a huge part of life in a lot of parts of the world. You know, there's U.S. drones and other, you know, countries' drones, and they fly over, and they're not looked up, you know, obviously they're not looked upon as something that's, you know, you're not welcome. They're not welcome. Mm-hmm. And then you're just like, oh, we have a big drone too. We're going to fly it over your thing. And if you're somebody in a country where you're already, you know, pretty suspicious of corporations, of your own government, of other governments, like having another thing fly over your head is, I mean, the best intentions, but yeah, the name and they're like, it's a big flying V that sort of looks like, you know, stealth bombers.
Yeah. A little weird. So no doubt Facebook has big ambitions, obviously, in how it's planning to achieve its 10-year plan. It talked a lot about their 10-year plan of getting more people connected to the internet, among other things, which we'll talk about in a second, that they spelled out on stage. But just before showtime today, it was announced that Google's ATAP, or Advanced Technology and Projects Leader, Regina Duggan, was hired by Facebook for its new Building 8 group. There, she's going to actually lead a team in building out hardware for the company's lofty ambitions that it kind of spelled out, some super secret stuff, as she's done at Google for the past many years with ATAP. It's an incredible loss for ATAP. But Roberto, do you think this is kind of indicative of how focused and determined Facebook is on meeting these objectives for the next 10 years? I mean, this is a huge get. I have to imagine this is part of the plan.
Yeah, you know, Facebook is always battling the MySpace issue. You know, they can't sit still. You know, MySpace sat still for like 3 minutes and then it was gone. That's, you know, they had to keep moving forward. And part of moving forward is like, you know, they got to get those next billion people. And, you know, that, you know, you have free basics, which, you know, it, on one hand is like, oh, we're giving people free internet. But on the other hand, also looks really awesome to investors when you have, oh, we just added a billion more users to our site. And so, you know, that also means, you know, investing heavily in VR, investing heavily in creating, you know, an open source camera that people can use for VR. And so this makes sense. You know, they're trying to be more than the company that just helps you like cat pictures. You know, they want to be more like Google. You know, they make their money from ads. Google makes its money from ads. And they're like, you know, we have this money. Let's do other things and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. So you bring up VR. What about like the social VR? What was that all about? There were some crazy things going on there.
It's funny because they sort of started off the day before Zuckerberg was saying that, you know, this is a ways off. You know, this isn't here now, but it's part of our roadmap. And it's interesting. Like you can hang out with your friend in VR and then go to London and take a selfie, which is the saddest vacation I've ever heard of, I think. It's right up there with the where you get the backdrop and then you take a picture of you in front of the backdrop. It's like it's that sort of thing. It sounds like fun. And you know, they're investing really heavily in VR, and the social VR thing sounds cool, but you still have to, you know, convince people to put a thing on their face for 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes at a time. And I think that, you know, for, you know, everyone who's used VR is like, oh, this is awesome for like 10, 15 minutes. And they take it off. Yeah. And then you don't kind of, you know, if you're a gamer, you're like, yeah, this is the greatest thing ever. But you know, I don't want to say regular folks, but regular folks like myself, I mean, I don't want to have to stick a thing on my face every day for 30 minutes in order to see a few things out in the world just because I can do this. Well, wow, I'm in a room. I'm like,
well, it's a conundrum because the people who can afford VR goggles now can also afford to go to London tomorrow if they felt like it. But there's lots of people who can't afford to go to all these places and never will be able to. So it's amazing the idea of those people being able to see places they could never travel to. But right now, it's not at all affordable to do any of that.
Depending on the solution.
Well, Google Cardboard, but not what they were talking about.
The super immersive kind of experience. Kind of connecting the dots here was that VTime app that, you know, was announced and I played with a few weeks ago. And it, to a certain degree, kind of blew my mind. Just the suddenly realizing that inside of Google Cardboard, I was sitting in a virtual room, and there across from me were one or two other people that I was actually talking to. I could hear their audio, and they were sitting there. You know, it's a very transformative, different thing. I don't know if that's the future, but it certainly gives somewhat of a view into, and I think this was very, very interesting about Facebook's kind of talk in general, is that they've evolved a lot over the last 10 years, and then they gave a really interesting kind of roadmap for the next 10 years. And it's very forward thinking, very futurist, you know, in scope. I suppose they have the money to pull it off. And I suppose it's very possible that in 5-10 years, we're all sitting in VR and that's how we navigate Facebook. I remember when they bought Oculus and they said, we can envision, you know, a future where you are doing Facebook inside VR. And I could not understand or picture what that actually means. What does that comment mean? I get it from a broad strokes, but what exactly does that look like? This might be a view into what that actually looks like. I'm not entirely sold that people want to do this, but maybe they will. 10 years is a long time.
You have to have that compelling content. I mean, the New York Times VR app, when it came out and I tried it out, it had really compelling content. But, you know, then there's also, you know, people are like, oh, we're doing an interview with somebody. Let's put it in VR. There's nothing around the person. You're just looking at a person. But now I can turn around and see like the wall over here and the wall over there and maybe the audience behind them. That's not compelling content. That actually will end up turning people off of VR. You have to make sure that the content that you're putting forth VR actually works best with that, you know. That media has to work with VR in order for people to say, oh, this is actually cool. If you just sort of ham-fist things into it, you're just going to turn people off.
Yeah.
So yesterday was also big bots. Everybody was talking about bots. And I tried some of them on my phone.
Messenger?
In Messenger, the Messenger bots. It's very early days for them. So far, it seemed like more spam to me, just useless, slow. Someone's telling me the weather that I could have found out so much more quickly. What do you think about the bot so far?
You know, they want them to be the new apps within, you know, something that you're already in, Messenger. I use a lot of different messaging apps. And Poncho the Cat or Cat Poncho or
Poncho the weather cat. Yes.
Yeah. I love cats. Poncho takes way too long.
Yes.
Nearly every phone on the market, you can just like hold down a button and say, you know, what's the weather? And it tells you what's the weather.
Yeah, right.
You don't have to launch an app. It's, you know, it's.
Or you don't even have to do that. You turn on your screen and it's just on like an Android. It's just there on your lock screen or whatever.
Yeah. And you know, there's a lot of sort of, you know, it's a lot of growing pains with these things. And I can kind of see it like. They need to be better than the apps that people are already using. That's sort of, you know, you need to have a reason to like, oh, let me launch Messenger to do this and talk to something as opposed to let me just tap on an app and tap 3 times to get what I want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And some of them are just showing off the technology. It's very similar to the Amazon Echo because, you know, that it's an open platform. So anyone can develop apps for the Echo or I guess, you know, skills is what they call them. So it's the same thing. Like I looked through bots and there's like a choose your own adventure, like mystery. It's like Detective Keys or something in Facebook Messenger. And it's like, oh, there's a mystery. Can you solve it? And, you know, like I'm sitting here doing that. The same thing is on the Amazon Echo. And it's just, it's new and it's like, oh yeah, anyone can do anything and it's open. So everyone is going to do anything and not everything is going to be great.
I think it's pretty funny. You pointed out this article from The Verge, Nick Stat wrote and the headline is perfect. Facebook's new Messenger bots are the slowest way to use the internet. And I think, you know, and I think the point is valid. Obviously this is new. You have to imagine, you have to hope anyways, that things are going to speed up and everything. But his point pretty much is why use a bot in this particular world when your fingers are faster, when it's just quite literally faster to open up a page and do the search and find the information or whatever the case may be. You know, Amazon Echo, yes, it's a little different from the fact that, you know, you're talking to it. It's kind of a different platform or whatever. But when you're already on your phone, you know, or your browser or whatever, it's just as easy. You know what I mean? Not easier to do this. Why am I going to choose to? I mean, and from what this article was saying, the digital assistant, the M, you know, Facebook's M, sometimes that takes minutes to longer to get back to you with a query. So then this one thing that you just wanted to kind of get in there, do it, and be done ends up being this long, drawn-out process where you're waiting for a response to do the next thing. And I don't know about anybody else, but when I want to get something done, I just want to be done with it and move on because I've got other things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Okay.
early days for bots.
Yes. Okay. Punctuate. Period. Shifting away from F8 a little bit here, you also just posted, speaking of Amazon Echo, you posted a review of the Amazon Tap, kind of a miniaturized, but I don't know, kind of looks like a rugged Amazon Echo, if there is such a thing. I'm confused as to what it actually is. So who is this designed for?
I love the Echo. Alexa, the voice-based wake-up system of Alexa is awesome. I use it all the time. I use it to turn on lights. I find out what the traffic is. I find out what the weather is. You can figure out what's going on at NPR. It's awesome because I can just sit on the couch or I can be walking around my house and just say, Alexa, and then, you know, whatever my query is. The Tap is different. It doesn't have that wake up. You have to push a button because it's a speaker. It's basically a Bluetooth speaker. And then they said, hey, let's put Alexa on it. So it's a pretty good Bluetooth speaker with Alexa. But the fact that you have to push the button sort of diminishes the magic of Alexa because you have to go and then we go and push this button and then you can ask. And it does all the same things. It does all the same sort of, you know, Alexa, you know, I can turn on my lights. I can order things from Amazon.com. But because it's a Bluetooth speaker, I take Bluetooth speakers to the beach. I take Bluetooth speakers to the park. I go, you know, I take them places. And unless I want to, you know, hook it up to a MiFi or my phone, it the whole Alexa system becomes mute. Now you just have, you know, a sort of nice speaker, and you can get better sounding speakers from someone else. Yeah. So it's sort of a weird product that Amazon's like, well, you know, we have the Echo. And we have the Dot. How about we make basically an Echo, but with like a really good – well, not a really good, a pretty good speaker. And because it has a speaker on it, let's put a button on there. So, you know, because you're not going to be – it's not going to be able to hear you if it's also blasting music. So it's this weird sort of product that because I like Alexa so much, I kind of wanted to like it. But at the same time, there was a lot of me just doing this all the time. I'm like, oh.
Why am I using
it? Yeah, I mean, I have the Echo and I have the Dot. I love them both. The Dot was just slipped right into our Echo family beautifully. I use it all the time. I mean, it is
what perfect. What is the different use case for the Dot?
The Dot is smaller. And I'm not a music aficionado. So the speaker in the regular Amazon Echo is just fine for me. For some people, it's like, but the Dot hooks up to your Bluetooth speakers, either by Bluetooth or you can also hook it auxiliary to old-fashioned speakers anyway. So it's just smaller.
It just empowers a speaker set.
It's smaller. It's cheaper. Okay. It has some issues. Like if I don't have a giant house. So like I had to change one of the names, the wake word for one. Otherwise they were setting them off. I was setting them off at the same time. And they don't like it. I would love to be able to say like, you know, play this Pandora station and have it simultaneously play in two rooms. Unfortunately, it doesn't do that. It's like slightly off, which is weird. It's the Tap just seems like somebody's, I don't know, brother was like, I have an idea. And they were like, okay, let's let him do that too. You know, I mean, you get why it has the button, right? Because you don't want to walk around a speaker listening to everyone all the time.
And obviously Amazon wants to Alexa all the things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's their current hotness. They want to build it in. If it's a speaker, we should build it into the speaker if that's what we're making.
Right.
Yeah, you can kind of understand.
But I mean, I feel like Amazon does this a lot. They have these amazing products and then they have like the Fire Phone, you know? So it's just like they must have a team there that just has dumb ideas that they let make and come to fruition.
Let me have the Fire Phone. Sorry. No. I am, of all the tech in the last few years, Alexa the Echo is by far the best thing. And it was such a weird thing because it's kind of a sleeper hit for Amazon. They didn't give it to reviewers initially. Like you had to be part of a lottery to be able to just order it. And by the time it came out to reviewers, it had been out for like 6 months. And then everyone got it and we're like, oh my God, this is awesome. And so I think it was a surprise for Amazon. It was really a surprise for everyone who actually used it. And so then they're like, oh, man, we should put in other things. And the Dot, I mean, I don't have a Dot yet, but the idea that I can plug it into better speakers is great because I do say, oh, play this Spotify, you know, playlist or play this Pandora channel. I mean, it's great. Like, you know, I'm sitting on the couch and I'm reading probably a Kindle. And I just Alexa, play X, you know, Spotify playlist, and it plays it, and it's awesome. And but the tap is such an odd, it's just weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of seems that way. Yeah,
you can also listen to this show. You can listen to yourself tonight, Roberto.
Oh, make sure and do that, Roberto.
Yeah. Just ask it to play the program Tech News Today, and she will.
There we go. All right.
All right. Well, now we have an email from Tim, who writes, on your segment yesterday, you continued, this was 2 days ago, actually, when we were talking about emoji. We're still talking about emoji. You continue to refer to the grin emoji as the grimace emoji. Now, this is the grin. The grin has the eyes, if you're watching. It has, I guess, squinted
it has
eyes.
Like frowny eyes.
And this is the grimace. With the same mouth, but different...
Circle eyes.
So I had no idea. I have been grimacing at people when they thought I was smiling at them, smiling when I thought they were grimacing. Roberto, did you know that there was a difference between the grin and the grimace?
One day I went through all the emoji on my Mac and I found out all their names, but I didn't... When I think of grimace, I think of the purple blob from McDonald's. Mm-hmm. So I don't even think about like the actual like facial expression of grimacing. I think of... this weird purple blob. It somehow just disappeared from McDonald's lineup. I don't know what happened to Grimace, if he's on the streets, if things are working out, if he had a falling out with Mr. McDonald. I don't know. But
I'll finish the email that he wrote. My wife and I dated long distance for 2 years before getting married and frequently use the grin emoji as part of our conversation, but rarely the grimace. I just wanted to highlight the difference between the similarity may be why the iPhone emoji had a more negative impression in the article that you discussed.
Well, I will say you pulled up your iPhone keyboard with the two, and I was like, well, it's kind of hard to know the difference, you know, when they're not side by side. And you said, well, they are side by side. And then I looked at it, and the dots for the eyes are so entirely small that you kind of don't really see a difference on the small screen. So no wonder there's an emoji divide going on right now.
I guess we're stuck with words.
Ah, oh, dang it. Okay.
That's a weird grin. What kind of grin is that? It's just like... It's just, like your grin usually has... Like,
it's not a grin.
You know, the ends of your lips usually go up. You know, some sort of...
Don't like that.
But like, this is... I don't think I can do it without like doing a smile.
Pretty that's sure if you grin at somebody like that, they might punch you.
Yeah, that's a face punching grin.
Yes, that's what they need to rename it. Face punching grin.
That's the official name.
All right, coming up, your longest binge watching TV session ain't got nothing on the Guinness Book of World Records record holder, you lazy animal. But first, let's take a minute to thank the sponsor of this episode, and that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is here to save the day if you're hiring or if you happen, you know, to need to post your job online. You're looking for the best candidates. You don't know where to post it, or maybe you do, and there's just so many. Posting jobs in one place is not enough to find the quality candidates, the ones you want actually helping you to run your business. If you want to find the perfect hire, you really need to post your job on all of the top job sites, and that can be such a pain. There's just too many of them. Well, now you can do it pretty easily with ZipRecruiter.com. You can post to 100 plus job sites, including social media networks, Facebook, Twitter, all those, all with a single click. So it really cuts down on the work that you had to do in order to do what you know you need to do to find those candidates. And you're looking in any city, any industry, nationwide. It's all covered. You just post one time, and then you watch your candidates kind of roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. They make it really easy for you to kind of browse and scan through. No more juggling emails. No more calls to your office. It's all contained inside of ZipRecruiter. You can screen your candidates super quickly. You can rate them, hire the right person fast. That's what it's all about. You need to hit the ground running with that new person and go. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 800,000 businesses. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. All you have to do is go to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TNT to check it out for yourself. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Tech News Today. All right, TNT's fan of the day is Michael Rosner on Facebook, who sent us this picture of the show playing on, I think that's a Nexus 7, I'm guessing anyways, along with a little USB minion who I think is watching and learning everything there is to know about technology. We all got to learn somehow. Good on you, minion. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself, your setup, post it on Instagram, Google Plus, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we're going to find it. Yes, I'm talking to you. Don't look away. Do it right now. Okay? Thanks.
All right. Well, all of us have goals. 25-year-old Alejandro A.J. Fragoso set for himself the noble goal of breaking the Guinness World Record for binge-watching. And according to Variety and Tech Insider, he broke it with his 94-hour stretch of watching television. Fragoso watched back-to-back episodes of Game of Thrones, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Battlestar Galactica, Twilight Zone, Bob's Burgers, and Adventure Time. When interviewed, he said binge-watching can be, quote, quite taxing. The previous record was 92 hours. The event was sponsored by a multimedia company who also hired a physician to monitor the binge watchers. Tech Insider posted this exciting video.
Why do you even do this to yourself? I don't even know.
He also said he credits his Mediterranean diet for the ability to watch for this long.
That was just day one.
What? I don't know. My Mediterranean diet. What does that even have to do with? I watch a lot of TV.
It's just what he did. Yes.
Yeah, I don't. You can't. The rules were you couldn't break eye contact with the TV, but you got to get a 5-minute break every hour. So. Oh my God. Yeah.
Oh, 5-minute break every hour.
Yeah, okay, and you can build on those if you want to. If you don't want to take a break in an hour. Because who among us hasn't watched an hour of television? That's easy. But after that, you know, if you want to build up and take a 10-minute break every 2 hours.
And you could stand while doing this. Didn't have to be sitting there. Because I think if I was sitting down, I'd probably just collapse. I wondered what he did at the very end, if he just, like, fell asleep. Why couldn't you just make it to 96? Make it 4 solid days. That's all you needed to do was 2 more hours. No big deal, right? God, I could not even imagine putting my body through this. That just does not sound fun.
You think he got really angry at the end of Battlestar Galactica?
I know. I mean, I don't know how many, because there were some, I loved Battlestar Galactica, but there were some, there were some seasons that were thumbs down. So
totally.
Maybe only watch the good seasons.
This is definitely one way to catch up. If you've got a lot of shows on your list, and you need to catch up and feel like you're part of the conversation.
Shows.
Yeah, he did a pretty good job.
Yeah. He wasn't watching like 3 and a Half Men. He's watching some good shows.
Yeah, that would last like 3 hours. Seems to be a little bit of a disconnect, however, I will say. A multimedia software company, you know, that creates, you know, the software that this is kind of streaming from and everything, sponsoring an event that has someone using your product yet results in neurological side effects and increased heart rate, involuntary open-eyed micro naps, acute hallucinations. I don't know. It's just kind of like a little bit of a disconnect there.
Yeah. But. Well, I mean, streaming companies hope that we're not always streaming, like, you know, always streaming, because they can get more people streaming, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's, I suppose, a good point.
What's great is that we haven't actually named the company. I don't know the name of the company. Yeah. The whole reason
I know.
Is for us to name, we're like, I don't know, some random streaming company, but Mediterranean Diets.
And Battlestar Galactica.
So true. But obviously.
I'm going to go home and eat hummus and watch TV for the rest of the day. That's what I did last night. I'll do it again tonight. I don't care.
Yeah, I'm totally going to finish this season of Louis with olives, hopefully, tonight.
Well, yeah.
Roberto, thank you so much for joining us. You're, of course, a senior writer at Engadget. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you have posted today or in the past couple of days?
I don't know.
Or anything you're working on.
You're such a great self-promoter. That's what I love about you.
Can I talk about my band?
Yes.
Do it.
All right. My band is playing a show on May 6th in San Francisco at the Verde Club. There we go. We're doing an LCD Sound System tribute night. So we're playing all LCD Sound System songs. So if you live in San Francisco and you're down with the LCD Sound System.
Mm-hmm. Or if you're a developer there for F8, you know, stick around.
That's not till May.
Yeah,
May.
I mean, you could stick around. You stick around for a really long time.
San Francisco's a great place.
I couldn't think of anything else I'm doing. I'm like, what do you do with your life? I'm like, I don't know.
So your band, what's your band name?
North American Scum.
That is important information.
Mm-hmm.
If North American Scum sounds like your kind of scum, then go watch North American Scum.
And you know what? You know what makes us great? Mediterranean diet.
Fantastic. Olives and hummus.
Right.
Thank you, Roberto. Always a pleasure getting you on.
Yep.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
Tomorrow's guest will be none other than Patrick Beja from Frenchspin.com and Le Rendez-vous Tech. TNT, sorry. Sorry, man. I should not have done that. TNT Records Live. Although, you know what, Patrick? I know Patrick very well. He's very used to it. TNT Records Live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be a part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv or leaving us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. You can hit us up on Twitter. We are at TechNewsTodayTV.
Subscribe to the show at twit.tv/TNT. Find me on Twitter. I am at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Kara Cole, and Anthony Nielsen for itsing us.
Whoa,
I can't even believe this.
This is exciting.
You are about to experience the glory of an It's It.
I'm really excited.
Thanks to all the other folks who help us produce this show every single day. And thanks to you for talking tech with us. We'll see y'all tomorrow. I'm not going to high-five you with that.
Bow.
Woo! All right. So, wow, Anthony, thank you.
Where did you get those?
All from Megan.
Here you go.
Oh, yeah. Here, you can have one. There you go.
Wait, I keep going to the wrong side.
Yeah.
I don't think it's actually going to work, though. There, just eat.
Wait, why is she like I'm wrong?